Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Joe Cole, and this is my podcast where I talk to millennials about their lives and how they are managing young adulthood. I release these episodes on Monday, but I'm recording this on Father's Day, so I would like to wish happy Father's Day to any possible fathers who may listen to the show, and to my father, who, you know, all the cliches gave me so many opportunities in life that he never had to make sure that I had a better life than he did. I hope everyone got to spend some time with family, and I hope hope your children gave you adequate appreciation and gifts. I never know what to get my dad. Today, my brother and I laid down grass seed in our backyard for my dad, and I didn't complain about it, so I think that's a good enough gift for him. And if that's not the epitome of privilege, I don't know what is. But anyway, happy Father's Day. And today on the show, I talked to Ben Saad. I talked to him on the Millennial Phone Call Medley episode. He was the first person I talked to, the first person I called. And he was my housemate my junior and senior year. He lived with Mustafa Eligar, who was a past guest, and me. So he was a direct part of half of my college experience. And directly after college, he moved out west to L.A. and has now been there for about a year. And I've talked about on the show about how a month ago I went out to L.A. to check it out and interview some people. And Saad was gracious enough to let me stay with him. And I figured, why not get him on the mics while I was there and catch up with him and have him talk about how he's handled such a geographical change, a drastic geographical change. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Ben Saad. I don't really know what we're going to talk about, but I think I could guide this ship.
Good, because I have plenty of experience with semen, so I think you're on the right boat.
As someone who lived with you for 2 years, I can attest to that. I did not personal experience with you, but from the common
not
area.
Not that anyone knows of.
Yeah. I was just trying to be a good friend and say that you get with the ladies, man. You get with the ladies, man, and you're a ladies man.
I get with lady men.
My mom just texted me. The Pacific is very cold. Did you go and touch the water?
It is very cold.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
It's hot here.
Yeah, but there's no relation between being hot and the water being hot.
Huh. Yeah. Something to do with the moon?
Yeah, something. I think it's an astrological thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like if your sign is in Aquarius or you're Sagittarius, then it's cold. I'm not sure.
Sagittarius? Tell that story.
Oh, about the time I randomly guessed.
Yeah.
I don't even know the zodiac signs. I know like six of them.
Yeah.
And I just walked up to this girl and I was like, yeah, I can guess your sign. And I just picked one of the four that I know that's not my own sign, which is Aquarius. And I got it right.
And she was stunned?
Yeah, she was stunned. And then she started telling me about how she was a lawyer and things that I was uninterested with.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah. Hmm. Totally a Sagittarius thing to do.
She was a Sagittarius or an Aquarius?
I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, you're an Aquarius? Do you know what comes with being... I think I'm an Aquarius too. When were you born?
No. You aren't. January.
Oh. What am I?
I don't know. I don't know April. My sign. I remember.
I should know. What do you know? What is usually associated with an Aquarius?
My personality traits.
My exact entire being.
Exactly.
Sitting here with Benjamin Saad, in his apartment in Santa Monica, California. I visited him because I had some people to interview over here, and also, I had never seen L.A., and I wanted to see L.A., so I figured, why not pay my friend and ex-roommate, Benjamin Saad, a visit? And I was like, hey, Saad, want to get on the mics?
I just spit a few bars.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. But yeah, it's a nice little reunion we have here. Mm-hmm. Rekindling, if you will, even.
Yesterday you walked in and I was on the couch watching The Office and you had a slight grimace as if I'm accustomed to walking into a place where we both inhabit, finding you on the couch in a relaxed position watching Netflix.
It's funny because right before I left school, I took pictures of the house, and one of the pictures I took was in the living room, and I have the last known footage of you sitting on the couch watching Netflix, and it's funny.
In my most comfortable habitat.
Mm-hmm. Your base camp.
Yeah, buddy. So I definitely want to talk about everything you've been through coming out here, because how long have you been out here now? Has it been a year? No,
no,
it's been
we're rounding 11 months now.
You made the move like right after college.
Yes, sir. June 22nd.
So where are you at now? Let's start with that, and then let's work our way back.
Okay, well, let's start where I'm at now. You know, I actually just recently got laid off from my job, my position as a social media strategist at an advertising agency, and I'm in the in between job, so it's very adult of me, you know, mm-hmm. in between jobs. But you know, where I am now is kind of a reflection of, you know, where it started, and I think it's better to start from the beginning and kind of tell that story in a linear fashion. But
so where'd you grow up?
Marshfield, Massachusetts.
Mashfield.
It's a small town in between Boston and the Cape.
Steve Carell.
Yep. Steve Carell owns a general store in my hometown. All of Aerosmith lives there.
Oh, they still live there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not always, but they do live there.
Yeah, they have land there.
Yes.
What was that place like growing up?
I mean, it sounds like it's like glamorous, but it's just a small 95% Irish, white Irish Catholics.
Yeah. Was there a lot of masculinity? I just associate that with Massachusetts. Just a lot of like, hey, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Yeah, a little bit. I'd say.
How far outside of Boston is that?
40 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I'd say it's more, it's very uniform. Everyone's the same. There are people, obviously, that are different in anywhere that you go. But, you know, a large chunk of the culture, of the parents, of the town residents are all, you know, of similar background, similar, you know, mannerisms, still similar beliefs, similar, you know, political views.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of describe it as a bubble, you know. Much like any small, you know, upper middle class town.
Yeah, mine was like that.
Yeah, so you can relate to
that. What kind of child were you?
I was many children in one. Growing up, I was at one point you could call me the overweight, annoying fat kid, which was something that I know it's a joke now, but it's something that, you know, I struggled with growing up. Being heavy set, naturally, it's not like I ate a lot. I was just
always chubby.
Yeah, always chubby. And that was a good portion of my.
How were you annoying?
I was just, you know, little fat kid's defense mechanism is always humor. It's the greatest weapon on earth.
It's true. I had that. I was a little chubby kid.
Yeah, I mean, they say all humor comes from pain.
I've heard a quote of comedians choose to be comedians so they control why people are laughing at them.
It's very very insightful and based in reality. But you know, obviously everyone's born with, you know, some struggle. You know, some people are born without limbs, some people are born with, you know, diseases that they can't control. So relatively it wasn't like a, you know, it's not this huge chip that I have on my shoulder that I carry with me. You know, it's in the grand scheme of things, it was a relatively fixable problem, small problem. But at the time, it was.
Has it transferred to now, even being food cautious? Are you?
Yes. So yeah. Same. So yeah, and I think you can relate with that. As I'm very food cautious. Actually, I'm not. I eat whatever I want, but I'd say I'm more weight cautious. You know, if I put on 2 pounds, I'm hyper aware of those 2 pounds that I. that I put on, and I can see it in the mirror. And that's, you know, it's a double-edged sword, because on one end, like, it's good because that's, you know, it's going to keep me in shape for the rest of my life. But on the other side, it's, you know, I'm always gonna
beat yourself up,
beat myself up about it, and be unnecessarily worried about, you know, what is a almost unnoticeable change to people around me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so
what were your parents like? Were they active parts of your life?
Yes,
were they emotionally involved?
I had very, and I continue to still have, you know, extremely supportive parents that stand by, you know, any decision that I make, and that's one thing that I know that I'm very lucky to have.
Was there ever a time where you made a bad decision and they stood by it?
I have made several bad decisions. I wouldn't say they stood by it. You know, they're there to guide me in the right direction and make sure, you know, the shitty decisions that I make, whether it's, you know, getting too drunk at a hockey game and trying to fight the water boy when you just started, you know, experimenting with alcohol, you know, they were there to, you know, curb those behaviors and teach me that there's, you know, there's a way to do things, and there's certainly a way not to do things.
If you don't want to talk about this, you don't have to, and I could just cut this part up.
Yeah.
But I just thought of this. Remember, you know that crazy story of the, like that thing that happened on the beach?
Yeah.
Would you be willing to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll go into it.
So when was that, during high school?
No, so I mean, if you're going to edit it, and you might not, I would just preface it as, you know, a turning point in my life, and then I can go into that.
Okay.
But I mean, it's, you can even leave it in and that works, but
yeah.
I'd say that was a major turning point in my life. So summer going into my sophomore year, I was with a few friends on the beach. 4th of July is a huge thing in my town. You go down to the beach for the fireworks. A lot of police on duty because of, you know, unregulated bonfires, underage firecrackers. What do you call those? Fireworks.
Fireworks. Pyrotechnics.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I was with a friend of ours from school, Tom Garrity.
Mm-hmm. He also lives up there, right?
He lives close, but not really. He lives mm-hmm. in Franklin.
Right.
But I went to, you know, get him off the beach because I couldn't find him. And so I find him and we're going to head off the beach and I'm taking, you know, cause each road leads to the beach. It's a very small community.
Mm.
So I started walking off the beach onto a road and out of nowhere, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, alcohol involved, but not to the point of, you know, where I don't remember things or I was making rash decisions. This was at the end of the night. And this guy comes up to me and he puts his hand around my neck and he starts yelling at me. And I'm like, who the fuck is this dude? I don't even know who he is. It's like this older guy, I'd say, you know, probably 50s, 60s. And I distinctively remember, you know, I don't know for what reason. I just remember this thought crossing my head saying, like, I can't hit this guy. And, you know, whatever that is could have.
So he just came up to you.
Came up to me, started yelling at me and things that I couldn't even really understand because, you know, adrenaline's pumping. It's like you're in fight or flight mode. And, mm-hmm. and I remember having the reaction, you know, coming to that decision in that split second, you know, I can't hit this guy.
Mm.
And I was with two friends.
Because he's old, you thought that?
I don't know why I thought it. I just remember it crossing my mind. And
had you hit people before?
Well, I mean, you know, every kid gets in fights.
Not
but
me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a lot of kids get in fights. It's a kid thing to do. And, but I mean, and maybe it was because he was such a different, you know, different. There's such an age difference that, you know, maybe that crossed my mind.
Had someone who looked like that.
Yeah, I never had someone that could have been like my grandpa or dad.
Having that type of interaction
with me. Yeah. So, but I had my friends that pulled him off of me, and I see a cop walking down the street. So I go up to this cop thinking that I'm being, you know, a model citizen, and I'm like, hey, listen, you know, I don't know who this guy is. He just put his hands around my neck and threw me to the ground, and like, I have no idea who he is. I live right here. Like, I don't need to do anything about it, but I just want to let you know, as you're coming down here. So this is a young cop, really nice guy. He's taking my information. He's like, okay, like, we'll get this worked out. And as I'm talking to him, another officer comes up to me, puts my hands behind my back, you know, almost blindsided, and says, "You're under arrest for assault and battery on a senior citizen." And I'm sitting there like, "What the fuck?" Like, this is the stuff from you know, my cousin Vinny. Like, this is this is something that you don't, that doesn't really, or you know, coming from, you know, my upbringing, doesn't happen to people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was crazy, because, you know, I don't have to go into, you know, how emotionally draining it was. That part, you know.
But like in the moment?
No, following. You know, in the moment it was like what the fuck? Like, how did this happen? But, you know, the following 3 months where, you know, it's a small town, people know, you know, thankfully people knew that it was
Bullshit. So wait, what happened directly after you got cut?
I got put in the paddy wagon.
Yeah.
Taken down to the police station.
Did you hear any? Did the cops say anything? Or were you saying anything?
They were
to
being,
the cops?
Yeah. They were assholes to me. They were like, I was, my brother was down the street, and I was like, "Yo, go get my mom!" Like, go get mom. And as they're changing me from the cruiser to the paddy wagon, they're like, "Yeah, like mommy can't help you now." And the crazy thing about it is, you know, they falsified all the police report, and. If you look at the police report, which is obviously not on me, they used two different names of the same person to make it seem like two people filed complaints. And then, you know, we went back there and spoke with, because we had to hire a PI to sort this out.
Mm-hmm.
He went back there and spoke with this lady, and she's like, "I've never seen this kid in my life."
Really? Yeah. Wait, so the cops said that there was two people who filed complaints about what? That they saw you?
That identified me as... The person who came up and just punched this old man in the face.
Was the reason why they did that is because the old man told them that you did
it? I have no idea. I don't know what he told them. I was never really, you know, allowed access to that side of the story. But, you know, I lost a lot of faith in the justice system that, you know, that we believe in, that, you know, we're even seeing today with, you know, people being shot and... in racism, and it's a real problem within, you know, the justice system that we know, and it's not as foolproof as mm-hmm. as we think it is. Those guys were all dickheads, you know.
So it was a 3 month process.
It was so what happened was I had this charge against me, which is a felony charge, which is, you know, essentially life-ending if it sticks. So we had to hire a lawyer and a private investigator, which again, you know, so thankful that this is something that I, you know, mm-hmm. that I have the privilege of doing. And it's really not to be taken for granted, because, you know, if I was, you know, from an impoverished family or something like that, you know, it would just be like, you got to settle. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to settle, or you have to maybe go to court and lose and stick with this
charge.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, I had to appear in court, plead not guilty. And, you know, an investigation had to ensue, and it had to be, you know, you had to compile the evidence before, the trial, and then, or the hearing. And, basically, what happened was I got a deference, which means if you stay out of trouble for a period of 4 months, mm-hmm. the charges will be dropped against you. It's sealed, so if you look at my record, it's not there. You know, but if you look up Benjamin Saad, Marshfield, there's the news article that says Benjamin Saad, assault and battery on a senior citizen with disabilities. We've since had it, you know, edited that says this charge was dropped, but
still know, comes up.
That's among the worst thing that you can have for, yeah. you know, your search engine optimization. Yeah, exactly. So no, I think that changed me a lot. Of, you know, I was just a stupid college kid who was.
Well, so going into college, you said it changes you a lot. Going into college, what were you wanting college to be, and how did it
change? I think I was just, you know, I was very ignorant to the world. I had no idea, like, what college was. I had no idea what, like, a fraternity was
mm-hmm.
coming into college. I don't know why I chose Quinnipiac. I really had so little knowledge about, you know, higher education. So I just came into it, and it was like a, you know, cool, we're getting fucked up every night, and
just we're doing college because that's what people exactly. say we should do.
No direction. You know,
no critical thinking about what you want to get out of it. Really,
exactly. But I'd say that just put me on a steady path to mature, if anything, you know, because it was incredibly humbling, because part of the process was I had to go apologize to this person that I did nothing to, that basically, you know, fucked me over severely. And, you know, I'm a prideful person in it.
Stubborn a little?
It's one of the most stubborn persons you'll ever meet. but having to go there and apologize was terrible, but it was, you know, I didn't have a choice. It wasn't like, yeah, I could say, no, screw this person. It was either that or, you know, you had to weigh the options. But
so those 3 months, you don't want to talk about what you're going through emotionally and mentally that kind of changed you coming out of the other
side?
Yeah,
I just, you know, I would say, you know, I don't like to dramatize these things because they're a lot of times it's an internal.
This is the place to do it, man.
Yeah, it's a lot of times, you know, it was a very internal thing where, you know, I would wake up it's the only time in my life I could, you know, really describe myself at being rock bottom, because I would wake up every day.
Just depressed.
Exactly. You know, a lot of times if you do something stupid the day before, you go to bed and it's a fresh start, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't have that strike against you every single morning when you wake up, like, oh man, you know, every morning it was like, oh man, like, am I gonna have this life-changing charge against me that, you know, I can't get a job.
You were in the middle of shit and you felt like you had no control.
I had absolutely zero control over anything that was going on to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
what was the resolution ultimately? That thing where you said it just got charged for if you didn't behave?
Yeah, so the resolution was it was dropped.
Did they say why? Just
because there was a gross amount of evidence against the charge, so it was a losing battle. But they couldn't just drop
Did the courts find out about like the making up of like the two witnesses or anything?
I mean, that's
that might be what the gross amount of evidence was.
Yeah, it was more hearsay, and I mean, it's not hearsay. It was obvious, you know, it was written in text. But, you know, it wasn't a revenge tactic would be, you know, then go back and, you know, sue the town, because you can't sue the police department. You have to sue the town, you know, for doing that. And it just wasn't worth it. It was one of those things where it's like, you know, you just got to get out of it, you know, however unscathed you can get, and then just, you know, move on from it. You know, you don't need revenge. You don't need to tell those guys to go fuck themselves when you see them. You know, you just...
Yeah.
Keep your head up or down, whichever you want, and just, you know, walk past it. So
it was in your town?
It was in a beach that is located in my town that is a part of the town over. So I'm from Marshfield. It happened in Humorock Beach.
Have you seen those cops around anywhere ever again?
They're in Scituate. Yeah, there has been a few other interactions that I don't really want to go into.
And yeah,
I don't know if I'm necessarily at liberty to.
Yeah, that's fine.
but yeah,
when you were done with that and it was the summer, what was your thought process now of like going back to school for after that happening? Did you have a different thought process?
It was through school, because it wasn't dropped until November 1st.
So, oh, really? Wow.
I came into my sophomore year thinking like, yeah, I gotta be really careful about what I do. I could do something stupid, and, you know, just being caught at an underage bar.
So you like blamed yourself and thought maybe you were somewhat responsible for the drama and the chaos, and you're like, maybe I could do something like that again? Or?
No, I didn't really blame myself as much as, you know, I kind of am just, you know, naturally hard on myself. So, mm-hmm. And, you know, if trouble follows you once, you never know. So I was just, you know, I was very cautious, especially when you're, you know, you're going to school where you're getting drunk every night, and mm-hmm. you're not 21 yet. So I stayed away from using a fake ID, which I did have.
As did everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just, you know, I really kept my chin down and stayed out of trouble until the charge was dropped. And
Then start getting into some trouble.
I mean, any normal amount
of
a college kid. But
then you joined SIGEP that semester, right?
Yeah.
That was that semester?
Yep, that was that semester.
Oh, so you joined before the charges were dropped.
I didn't join before that.
No, it was fall, right? And you said that.
Yeah, so I joined fall.
And then they got dropped that November?
Yeah.
So as you were going through it, you were unsure about the where the charges were at as you were like pledging?
Yeah.
That probably helped you get your mind off of it.
Yeah, it was a very important step for me. I think I really got the most out of college doing that. You know, it wasn't the only thing in my college career, but it was, you know, I would say among the highlights of you know, good guys.
And then junior, senior year, we lived together.
Yeah.
In a house.
Had some memorable times.
Had some memorable times. Butt heads a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
I think we finished everything in a good place, right?
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah.
I think that was...
We're just both... Well, you're stubborn and I'm sometimes cold.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like...
Exactly.
You're a button pusher a little bit. And then I would respond to that with distance and just kind of being cold.
Yeah, I think we had a very interesting dynamic at the downstairs house.
And then Stav was always the person who tried to be like the fixer of everything, but he had his own set of issues that he had to work out.
Exactly. And it was, you know, sometimes it was, you know, it was great. I think we had a very strong junior year.
Mm-hmm.
And then senior year, I just think what happened, you know, was because there's no question there was a distance, but I think, you know, three very different people, you know, they can get along.
I was such a different person senior year than I was junior year.
Very different.
In so many ways.
You know, just, you know, three very different people, you know, need to do their own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if it works and you know, they vibe, then, you know, then don't change it. But, you know, us three as separate people just kind of drifted in a natural way. It wasn't, you know, there was no animosity. There was just...
Yeah, I did like late night and didn't go out as much. And Stav was all about having the most fun possible and had SGA and you were doing your thing.
Exactly. So then, yeah. So
what do you think you learned most from that junior, senior year of just living in the house and just... It's time to be have responsibility.
I think I learned you know, a lot about accountability.
Can't trust landlords or neighbors.
Exactly, they'll steal your paraphernalia or your TV.
Yeah,
if you leave your house unlocked. No, I think I learned a lot about responsibility and accountability. And it sounds like I'm preaching to you know, an eighth grade class about cleaning up after yourself. But no, just, you know, same. There's certain things that you have to learn and adapt to with living, you know, with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I don't think I ever told that story on the podcast about how when we left the house at the end of May of our senior year, there was a TV that I left there that was hung up on the wall, that was mounted on the wall, and I was going to give it to the guys who were moving in next, and I was going to just come back and collect money from them. And then when I went back, it wasn't there, along with our cable box. It was all gone. And I was like, what the hell? And then I remember I went to the cable company with Zambito, one of the kids who was moving in there. And they're like, yeah, someone returned your cable box. And it was none of the people who were moving in. I asked them, none of them returned it. And none of the people who lived there before returned it. So someone must have stolen the cable box and then realized... that they had to that they couldn't do anything with it, and they literally returned it to the Comcast offices.
Pretty responsible criminal.
And I remember they had security cameras in their building, and I filed a police report, and the cop called me and was like, "Yeah, we'll look into that," but I never heard anything.
Yeah, I guess it happened again too.
Oh yeah, they got other shit stolen.
Yeah,
Turner got his car stolen.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a hot spot.
Yeah. They have shades right there by, now.
Yeah.
It's right off the highway going to New Haven.
Quick access for an escape.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you finished college.
Yeah. So So that's kind of, you know, where this current story begins as I finish college. And I think a very millennial privileged problem is not knowing, you know, what you want to do with your life.
Wondering if it's all going to turn out to be okay.
Exactly. Because, you know, there are people that have no choice. There are people that, you know, it doesn't matter what the fuck they want to do with their life.
Right.
You know, this is what you need to do to provide for yourself, your family, and whoever else. So it's a pretty relatively, you know, small problem to have. And I try to, you know, look at it like that. But you know, I truly am a person of many different interests.
Mm.
I like to consider myself right in between, creativity, you know, and analytics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm too creative to be in a desk job, and, you know, I'm too
analytical.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a different word for that, but yeah.
You're too interested.
Yeah. And too focused and too, I don't know. I'm really at a loss for the word that I'm trying to say.
So to do what though?
To, you know, to just, to do like a creative job, like be an artist or like a painter. I'm just, and I also like don't think I necessarily I have the chops for that, but you know, I have a little bit of that bone in my body where
you're a good drawer.
Hmm?
You're a good drawer.
Yeah. But you know, again, I don't think that I'm good enough to, you know, go work for Pixar or things like that. So I sort of exist in this in between space where the answer is not, you know, it's not, okay, well, I'm going to go, you know, be an account manager or, you know, do finance. Like that stuff would bury me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, oh, well, I'm going to be a painter. No, I don't want to do that either. I would go crazy because there's not enough work. So I had an opportunity to come and work as an intern at a record label here.
What was that connection?
Someone who worked with my father or through my father. You know, I was just exploring internships because I went to London the summer before when everyone was doing internships. So, you know, I had to start at an internship. And that one came up out of, you know, yeah, like it was like an offhand mention, like, oh, you know, if you want it, I doubt you do. And just something clicked in my head. I was like, you know what? Like, fuck it. Why not? You know, everyone talks about, oh, I want to go out to California and live there and see what it's about. You know, I had one job offer lined up coming out here, back home. And I just said, you know, I don't really want to do that. You know, if I do want to do it, I can come back and find something similar to that. So I just took it. I was in this weird state when I graduated, you know, almost, you know, the ground beneath you is crumbling, you know, everything that you've come to know for 4 years, your friends, the school, the area.
I feel like you're not a part of anything anymore.
Exactly. And even before, you know, you've been a part of education for 20, 21, 22 years of your life. That's all you've known. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, it's time to to leave the nest.
I talked about with this guy, Eric Huberman, about how like before college is over, there's a context through which you live by. There's there's rules, like there's classes you have to take, and then there's these organizations, and those are things you can do. But when you're done with college, it's like it's less defined. Like it's more up to you to make the rules for yourself, and that can be overwhelming.
Yeah, I would say that's the perfect word for it, is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of in this, you know, manic, overwhelmed state where I was like, well, you know, what's a better opportunity to just go out there and to just do it? And I didn't think about it. I really didn't think about it. I didn't spend a lot of time. I knew, you know, for whatever reason, I just knew that if this opportunity played through, then I was just going to take it. And it did. And I packed my bags and I left a month after graduating with really no idea what the fuck I was doing. Thankfully, you know, I had a buddy, Kev Carroll, out here to let me
gonna be on
there.
The show eventually.
Yeah. Well, hey future Kev. Yeah. And that was, you know, that was huge because that was another important factor of how I came out here. I wouldn't have just I don't think I would have just moved and, you know, found a place, because that's incredibly hard to do. But, you know, he let me stay on his couch for a month or more on a blow-up mattress in his room. It was like a month-long sleepover, which, you know, eternally grateful for. And that's why, you know, I let people come if they're here and they say, you know, I need to stay somewhere. You know, I pay that forward. But
thank you.
Know, yeah, of course, it's my pleasure. But you know, it's been, you know, and I'm still under a year. My main goal out here right now isn't to get caught up in something that I think would be cool. You know, I think, oh wow, like Hollywood's awesome. I want to get into that. You know, I want to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that and see, you know, what piques my interest. And you know, I've weeded out things that I don't like, and I've weeded out things that I'm interested in.
So what was that studio job like?
it was
a record company.
Yeah. It was a little less structured than I had imagined.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like, oh, well, like you're here, like you can just sit and watch if you want. You can make some copies. And it was interesting.
Was it paid?
No, it was not paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I took up a job as a barback in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
While that was happening. It was interesting, you know. I really got to see the music industry, and even applied for a few jobs within the space, and then ultimately decided that, you know, I didn't really like it that much, so I was going to try something else.
What happened with the bar back thing?
Well, I got in a car accident.
Yeah.
When I was out here, hit by a truck, driver's side.
Like a pickup truck?
Yeah. Driver's side. I wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
So you had a car here?
I had a car here. I shipped my car out here, and I was new to the area. I moved after I stayed with Kev. And every street is a four-way stop except this one particular street in a row of four-way stops. So, you know, being naive, I just assumed that this was a four-way stop too. So I saw the car coming, but then proceeded to go because I assumed he was going to pull to a gradual stop, and he didn't. And I got, you know, smashed by this car. Car was instantly totaled. It was an older truck with a metal fender. And
his car was totaled? Yeah,
no, mine was. They said if it was a newer car with a carbon fiber, I think that's what they're made out of, fender, then, you know, I probably would be dead. And I walked out without a single scratch, without any back injury, any neck injury, and the airbags went off.
Were you cut up at all?
Nope. It's truly, yeah. And the car was going like 30 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. It is bizarre, and it's otherworldly that you can just walk out, you know, like that. So I, you know, financially it didn't make sense to Uber to Hollywood every night, you know, spend five of the hours that I was working on transportation. So I started looking for another job.
Mm-hmm.
I landed at this advertising agency, Culver City, startup agency. It was good. You know, I think that I learned a lot from it, but you know, at the end of the day, I liked the industry, but I didn't like the small workforce that I was a part of, in terms of, you know, five people, six people at an office, every day, you know, ranging from like, you know, their 30s, late 20s, mid 30s, you know, it wasn't a way for me to get involved in the city.
So what was the work there?
You know, I did a lot of social media work, and, social media strategy, social influence managing, which is an interesting concept. You know, if you have a following of 100,000 people on Instagram,
I think I learned what influence marketing is. Influencer marketing.
Yeah, if you have 100,000 followers on Instagram, you can make, you know, assuming you're business savvy in any sense, you know, you can make a lot of money. You can make 200,000, I would say confidently, if you're a girl, more or less, you know, you can make 100,000 a year.
How?
It's easy. It's easy. If you're an attractive girl on Instagram, you can make a lot of money. Because companies just come to you and they say, we love your face. We would love you to advertise our product. You know, I was working with someone pulling in $850 for a single post, holding up the product by their face and saying...
Just because they had a lot of Instagram followers. Just
because they had a lot of Instagram followers, they had a nice look. It's
Wow. So was your job to find those people?
At first it was to find those people, and a lot of those people had representation already. And also, you know...
So it wasn't just random people.
No, it was a lot of research. So...
No, I'm saying, like, they had representation, so what, they were, like, actors or, like...
No. Just, there are people that just represent Instagram models. That's a whole industry. It's a huge industry, too. It's growing.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
So if you have a product, if you have, like, a, you know, if you want to sell your slim tea on Instagram, you reach out to these people and say, hey, I'll give you this much, and you can post my product, and either they, you know, will accept it or they'll negotiate, and those people go and buy the tea. There are, you know, multi-million dollar companies that have been built solely on Instagram.
Wow.
Yeah. Daniel Wellington, you know those watches?
Oh, yeah.
Instagram company.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting at first, and I, you know, it was something I had no idea even existed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, slowly it became, you know, I'm a little more hungry than, you know, representing people with a comparatively, you know, lower following, because there are people with 62 million people on Instagram.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I transitioned into social media strategy, you know, developing which platforms, you know, you should be broadcasting to, who you're looking for, things like that.
Were you fulfilled throughout all this, or what was your, were you always like...
I think it was partly, you know, a crutch. I'm very much a creature of structure. I like having A, mm-hmm. B, C, and D throughout my day in that order. I don't like changing it. I don't like D to come before C. You know, I like to get up, go to work, go to the gym, come home, do whatever, you know. But, you know, at first it was cool. It was like, oh, this is awesome. And then, you know, as the lights kind of, you know, faded on that, I was like, wow, I can really aim bigger out here. There's so much industry. There's so many things to get into. And I don't love this. You know, if I wanted to do this, I could go home and do this. Mm. And that has been, but I mean, eventually I got laid off because, you know, they were not able to book enough gigs that required social media strategy, and because of my stubbornness, you know, I was unwilling to go back to just Instagram influencing representation.
Oh, so you could have done the other thing?
I think it was a little bit of, you know, I needed to stand my, it wasn't like, you know, well, we're not going to do it, but, you know, but if you want to stay, you can still do this. It was like, I made it very clear that that's not what I wanted to do, and I wasn't, So
you get laid off, what are your initial thoughts?
You know, when a door closes, every time a door closes, another door opens is what they say. My initial thought was not like, damn. I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when I'm most aggressive with job hunting and bettering myself, you know, whether it's learning editing or learning, you know, programming. You know, I love learning new things. To ultimately make me a smarter person, so that when I can go into a job, I know what I'm talking about, instead of being, you know, a naive 23-year-old out here trying to work with people who are experienced. My initial reaction was just like, okay, that's fine. You know, there was no longer a place for me, because there was a period of, you know, no jobs being booked, so I was just sitting there, and they'd be like, well, what are you doing? And at first I was like, yeah, you know, I need some more work. And they're like, yeah, just sit tight. And then it became like, you know, I'm not doing anything. You guys don't have work for me. I can't, you know, that's not my responsibility to make myself look busy. You know, it had to end. It had to end, and I was okay with it. I left on good terms.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, now I'm in that in between.
And when was that?
2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, really not worried. And I think that's partly because it's a little different out here than it is, you know.
How so?
Because if you're, you know, if you're in a place like, you know, Massachusetts, not that there isn't, you know, there isn't jobs in Massachusetts, you know, the pickings are slim. You know, there's certain industries there, medicine and banking, whatever else is in, you know, Boston. I'm not really well versed in in the industries there. But, you know, out here is there's everything. You know, there's everything with relatively low barriers to entry. So, you know, if I mean, it could be anything. I could pick up, you know, doing Uber or working at a restaurant and it's a walk down the street. I could, you know, I could become a yoga instructor if I wanted to, yeah. or I could, again, I could get into a paid internship at a place, you know, at a studio. I could get, you know, and then work my way up there. Or I could also, you know, eligible candidate for an entry level position, most advertising marketing firms. So, the amount of possibilities is almost overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
have you actively tried to do things to make you figure out what you want ultimately?
I think the only way to do that is to, you know, to try different things. You know, I explore different hobbies, such as, you know, like I said, editing. I had a period where I learned programming, a website from scratch, even though no one does that anymore. Just learning different jobs and learning about how things work, economics. And it's funny because as I'm sitting here talking about it, it sounds like I'm glorifying, you know, being unemployed, which is, you know, by don't make
you're not glorifying being unemployed because you won't fucking take unemployment.
Well, I think that, you know, I think that if the end of the month comes around and I don't have a lead, you know, it's not smart for me to do it. But part of me works better under pressure and works better under stress and, you know, gets up and just crushes out applications when I know that, you know, when I know that there's a risk. And I think a lot of people work better that way. It's really the only way to motivate me is to light my own fire under, you know, my own ass, even if it hurts.
So what do you think? So what, a few questions, and you can answer them in whatever order you please. What, from being out here for almost a year, what do you like most about LA and what do you like least about LA, and what have you found out about yourself from being out here?
So I'll start with what I like most. Like I said, there's a lot of opportunity. You know, there's any job to be had. There's a lot of cool sites, cool things to do. You know, there's no shortage of activities.
It's like a melting pot too.
Exactly,
a lot of different people.
Exactly. Someone once described it to me: if you took a net of people and shook it, the people that would fall out would land in LA. But you know, and it's also it's a very advanced city where, you know, things that don't come to the or haven't even hit the East Coast yet are huge out here. You know, an example is, I know that there's something like that in the East Coast, but Uber Eats is you get onto your Uber app.
And they bring you food.
Minutes.
Press a button, they bring you food.
Minutes.
It's like pre-made,
exactly,
pre-made meal.
Exactly. Trends happen out here first, and no, it's probably pre-prepared.
And they keep it warm in the. They have a warming thing in the cars.
Yeah,
I read about it.
it's awesome. But you know, trends happen out here first. Advancements happen out here first. That's what I'd say I like about it. You know, when I think about, oh well, maybe I'll just go home, and it's like, how do you go home? How do you top what you have in front of you right here? What I like least about it, I would say, it is a very superficial city, and obviously, you know, you can find people that aren't. It's very superficial and it's very spread out. You know, you go to a bar and you go to a club. The first thing, you know, anyone asks is like, yeah, what do you do?
Professionally,
exactly, and it's important. It's not.
It's not just like a talking thing.
Exactly.
What's the word?
It's almost a talking point.
Yeah.
It's almost like a, you know, an interrogation. And so then, you know, because that question comes up a lot, you have people, you know, glorifying things that they do that aren't like that cool. you know,
they try to upplay something that isn't.
I'm a real estate agent in Beverly Hills that, you know, does blah 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 blah, and you know, realistically, their job is not nearly as glamorous as it seems. So jealousy is like a thing, you know. It's like, oh shit, well, I'm not doing something that cool, and it's just kind of a nasty cycle. It's also, you know, very spread out where, you know, you meet somebody or you have a friend that moves out and they're extremely far away, with or without traffic, but traffic is such a nightmare that it's usually with traffic.
Legendarily awful traffic.
Mm-hmm. And being a Boston driver, I am used to like being impatient and yelling at traffic, but you know, I've just learned to accept it and just lay back and spread my legs and just let LA traffic do its thing.
Have your way with me.
Exactly. And then, you know, what I'd say I learned about myself is probably the most that I've gained from this experience is, you know, I've learned a whole lot about myself. And I think that happens whenever you subject yourself to something extreme like this. You know, if you look around, like, this is a cool place to live, but, you know, imagine, you know, sitting in a studio apartment by yourself, you know, 7 o'clock at night, you know, no plans in sight. Like, what am I doing out here? You know, very, at times very, very lonely. And like, wow, I'm not doing it, like, nearly anything that I thought I would do out here. And I've seen people go home because of it. I've seen people leave because of it. It's very, as much as people are around and there are things to do, it's also like they're not there at all.
Was that the worst of it for you? Like, of what, like?
I'd say that's the worst, and it's what I struggled with a lot is, you know, especially with, you know, social media today, it's like I turn on Snapchat and I see all my friends, you know, meeting up in Boston to go party.
And, yeah, but what are they doing, really?
Exactly, and it's, but, you know, when you see all that, it's hard to frame it like that. Like, what do you, it's
FOMO.
Exactly, and it's not even FOMO as much as, like, you know, just missing home. You mm-hmm. know, all my friends are getting together to celebrate somebody's, you know, somebody's birthday, or I hope it never happens. You know, even if something bad happens, like there's a death in the family. You know, I'm not an hour drive or an hour flight away. I'm a 6 hour flight home, 5 hour flight home. But just seeing everyone, you know, together and kind of being out here, like, well, I don't really, you know, I haven't landed a dream job, you mm-hmm. know, I don't have a crazy social life right now. It's a little difficult, but, you know, you learn so much about yourself, about, you know, what you're capable of. And I think that for me, it's helped me grow tremendously.
Mm-hmm. That's good, man.
Yeah.
So what we usually end with, with, like, hopes for the future, personal, professional. You don't really know what you want to do professionally.
Yeah, well, I think hopes for the future is you know, I've kind of absolved that, you know, there's this one thing out there that I'm gonna find that's like, you know, I'm gonna love it. You know, when I stop doing that, I'll find it. So, you know, I hope for something that I enjoy doing, and I hope that it finds me as I actively look for it.
Is that ever going to happen?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, the Jerry Seinfeld is a quote is, your blessing in life is finding the torture you're comfortable with.
Exactly.
So everything...
There's never going to be one thing, but, you know, there's going to be, you know, one thing that I tolerate enough that I, you know, I could do day in and day out.
That's that could be applied to a woman, too.
Exactly.
There's going to be one thing in life that I can tolerate that I can do day in and day out.
Exactly. And I even think it's, you know, jokes
or
aside.
Or not do day in and day out.
Jokes aside, like, that is similar. You know, ultimately, you may have to make long-term decisions.
And that's the same thing with not eating the things you,
yep.
you want to eat.
To make decisions.
Working out.
That are going to stick with you. Yeah, you don't just make one decision to work out once. It's either you make the decision. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you make the decision to regularly work out or you don't, you mm-hmm. know. So I'm hopeful for that, and I'm hopeful to just find, you know, find something that I'm content with, because I don't really think, I think the idea of, it's going to sound dark, but I think the idea of, you know, finding happiness is a flawed perspective. I don't think there's really such thing. You know, you don't wake up every day with a, a gleaming smile on your face unless you're like unnaturally energetic and even a little uncomfortable to be around. I think, you know, the goal, the reasonable goal is to just, you know, find something that you're okay with, and sure, there are going to be bad days, but you know, you can always find the good in it. And it's not like, well, fuck this, I didn't like this anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So
me and Stav are going to have a conversation soon for the podcast about whenever I tell him I'm like down in the dumps, he's mastered this whole thing about how he can always be happy, and he thinks people could just be happy like that. And that it's, I guess it's like a peace of mind thing of just kind of,
yeah. And I'd say, it's I'd say like for the trick. Common person, yeah, that would be, that is, there's a trick to doing that. And, you know, a lot of times I'm down in the dumps, and, the only solution, no matter, you know, no matter what mindset I have, is to just, you know, kind of let it pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure there are people that can do it, but you know, there are also certainly people that
chemically cannot
do that. But you know, yeah, for me, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, let it pass, let it happen, and get up and move on.
Yeah, buddy. Do you have any personal things you want to do? Bucket list stuff?
San Francisco, Grand Canyon. While I'm out here, actually, I think if
Grand Canyon is,
if I ever make the pilgrimage home, which obviously I think will eventually happen at some point in my life. Who knows when? You know, just
like permanently or to visit?
No, just to move whenever that may be, you know, 10 months from now, 10 years from now, who knows? I really don't have that in sight. I'm just kind of letting it happen. But I think, you know, just driving road trip home across the U.S. is,
oh wow, yeah,
is something that, you know, how can you pass that up? So that's definitely on the bucket list.
Well, man, I very, very appreciative of your friendship, even though it's not a constant. I gotta keep up with people more.
It is what it is, you know.
Mm.
It's a lot of people post grad. You know, we all have our own lives.
It's because it's
about
the first time where, yeah, everyone's worrying about what the fuck they're doing.
It's okay
doing.
To be selfish.
And it's like, it's the type of thing where it's like, I definitely don't want to ask how other people are doing, because I know that will mean they're going to ask how I'm doing. And then if I don't have an answer, why would I want to ask that of someone else?
Yeah. And that goes, I think that goes back to the jealousy and
it's envy, not even jealousy. Envy. It's more of just like, self-conscious.
You wouldn't say that that's envy.
Well, it's not that I'm necessarily jealous of someone else's success. It's that I'm more, upset with myself, yeah, about my own lack of success.
And I'd also say that, you know, I find myself, you know, if someone gets a good job or a good promotion, I'm like
yeah, oh
damn,
yeah.
I think a lot of people.
Oh, I totally compare myself against other people. Yeah.
And I think that's an age to do that, where that, you know, that didn't exist before. It was like, oh, like Cindy's getting good grades, or Cindy has a good internship, and now it's like, oh, you know, whoever the fuck Cindy is, you know, she's having a, you know, she's getting promotions, and she's a job, and she's seemingly, you know, on the outside happy. And with LinkedIn and Instagram and things like that stuff is very, very much in your face and it becomes like a competition. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'll try to keep in touch more. And I'm looking forward to the next few days, or I guess just today, 'cause you're going tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, of course.
And, yeah.
All right.
Let's end this.
Benjamin Saad signing out.
Joe Cole logging off. That was like a backing up.
That was more like a signal lost.
Dee 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 dee.
I just made that up. Yeah. If we had like a sick game over sound to play. Da na 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 na. I don't know. Like, I want to hear that back before you play it. That was probably like out of tune.
No, it was good. Okay, that is it. That is Benjamin Saad. Love that man. Thank you, Benjamin, for coming on the podcast and for letting me stay at your house while I checked out LA. I wish you the best of luck out there. You'll find what you want to do eventually. We all will, right? Hopefully. Anyway, thank you for listening, to anyone who has. I will be back next week with another episode. Please like the Facebook page, That Millennial Life. Follow me on Twitter at That Mill Life. Go to thatmillenniallife.com if you do not have iTunes to listen to the episodes. Follow, and if you do have iTunes, subscribe. You know, rate and leave a rating. That's what you do, right? Leave a rating and leave a review, because that helps the show. But anyway, other than that, I hope you have a good week.